Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster here in the driver's seat and in the passenger's. Well, I guess he's kind of in the passenger's seat.
I'm riding shotgun.
There you go. Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our show. A big welcome. Tom, do you realize Thanksgiving is now 3 weeks from today?
Do you realize that the end of the year is a mere month and three quarters?
Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun.
It just kind of all piles up towards the end of the year, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you know my saying, the fastest quarter of the year, October, November, December, before you know it, it's New Year's Eve. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, our radio station, 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. That archive we have continues to grow daily. Almost 11 full years of programs at buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line. Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, Republican, the only Republican on the five-member Pima County Board of Supervisors. Mr. Christie, in the supervisorial district, representing the supervisorial district number 4. Supervisor Christie, how are you today?
I'm just great, Bill. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you very much. It will be 2 weeks this Saturday that the Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry was critically injured in a bicycle accident in downtown Tucson. Do we know any more than just that the doctors are optimistic about a full recovery? What are we hearing?
Well, we're hearing pretty much what you're hearing. I'm not privy to any other information that's already been disseminated, and there's good reason for that. One is obviously to respect the privacy of the family and Mr. Huckleberry's situation. Second of all is that the more information that comes out, there's the more opportunity for speculation and rumors to be also disseminated in the community. So I know as much as you do, and the one thing I do hear is a continuing report that Mr. Huckleberry is responding to treatment and is improving daily, albeit slowly. So I think in this particular situation, that's the best we can hope for at this particular time as far as information and as far as our hopes are for a full and speedy recovery for Mr. Huckleberry.
You know, I understand about the HIPAA requirements, and it's personal knowledge. It's kind of a fine line, though, Steve Christie, because after all, Mr. Huckleberry, extremely important in this community. I mean, the payroll for Pima County, I believe, is over 6,300 employees. So obviously there's a tremendous amount of interest. But again, I understand the wishes of the family. But I think you would agree with me that this is kind of a fine line.
It is a fine line, particularly somebody who is such a prominent official in Pima County and the governance of Pima County, as well as the many, many departments that he oversees, as well as the employees. Certainly people do feel they have a right to a little bit more information, but by the same token, if the situation had me in Mr. Huckleberry's, I'm not so certain I'd want the entire community to know of my medical situation at this particular point without, you know, fully having vetted the information in a proper way. So, yeah, it is a fine line, but I think at this particular point, the county is working as well as it can. There are situations in place and plans in place for such an opportunity that might happen in this particular case, Mr. Huckleberry not being able to perform his duties. But at this point, I have no reason to believe that things can't be continued in his absence, and it appears that they're not only being continued in his absence, but everybody in a deputy county administrator capacity appears to be holding up well and performing their duties and making sure things and services continue to be provided for the residents of Pima County.
Yeah, and I think Pima County's in very good hands. I've known Jan Lesher for 30 years, and she is the number two person, and she's, from what I understand, doing a really great job. So the county is in good hands. Let's switch now to the, you know, I mentioned how many employees we have here in Pima County, and certainly Pima County is one of the largest governmental employers in town, 6,305 active county employees. 82% of them, Steve Christie, have been confirmed their vaccination status as of November 1st. Now, what's going to happen to the rest of the employees who have not been vaccinated? And there is now a deadline, which you are very much opposed to and voted against it on Tuesday. Please fill our listeners in.
Well, I think this is going to be one of those situations where the goalposts are going to be continually moved backward, in that the pro-mandate element on the Board of Supervisors, which basically is the rest of my colleagues, and the pro-mandate folks in the county administration, I think they're going to have one of these eyeball-to-eyeball situations with the unvaccinated employees, and it's going to be a matter of who blinks first. And at the rate that I see certain trends from the county on this issue, it may very well be that the county blinks first. We dealt with an issue at the last board meeting on Tuesday that left a lot of unanswered situations and conditions. They talk about what has become the kind of the buzzword in the administration as far as being vaccinated or not when it comes to employees, about what they call vulnerable populations. And at one point, they kind of make an attempt to identify vulnerable populations, such as those in nursing care and assisted living, dealing with the elderly, dealing with incarcerated people. But it's important to note that those were considered at-risk populations some time ago, and consequently, the at-risk population were the first to receive the vaccinations. And in my own district, Green Valley, they reached what was then considered herd immunity some weeks before the actual herd immunity issue was even brought up. So my question is, if they're worried about unvaccinated folks dealing with fully vaccinated, vulnerable populations, it doesn't quite have that same onerous effect that they would kind of like to convey that as. Secondly, they have in place going back to the vulnerable populations, at one point they attempt to define what vulnerable populations are, but then in a memorandum dated November 2nd from Chief Deputy County Administrator Lesher, she points out that a review of the responses indicates that the identification of those who work vulnerable populations cannot be determined simply by job classification, and that some employees regularly work directly with vulnerable populations and others do not. So she goes on to say here, and I think this is the decisive sentence, a more in-depth analysis is required. So they haven't really analyzed or identified what employees really work with vulnerable populations and what vulnerable populations are constituted of. And then additionally, she makes a recommendation regarding a requirement that employees of the courts be fully vaccinated, but that the county cannot make that determination until we receive a ruling by the Supreme Court, which will rule on current mandates and requirements. So there's so much out in the air, so much of it is nebulous, so much of it is unidentified or with little analysis, that I think as this thing, whole issue of employee vaccinations and vulnerable communities evolves, those goalposts, as I alluded to earlier, are going to be set back and set back and set back, and it's going to be a matter of does the county really want to terminate, as my colleague Supervisor Hines insisted, does the county really want to terminate employees, somewhere around 2,000 of them, because they are not vaccinated? I think there's going to be some eyeball blinking, as I said, and I think it's going to come from the county.
Yeah, and we've got 62%. That's it's the lowest vaccination rate of any department, and that's in the sheriff's department. So you've got to wonder about, are we going to lose a bunch of deputies
That's my biggest concern in this issue, and I'm glad you brought it up, because there's a couple of issues that surround this, and one's we're understaffed to begin with in the sheriff's department, and now because they're not vaccinated, we're going to be understaffed even more, which obviously translates into a public safety issue. And I'm not sure if the residents of Pima County are going to abide by that and accept that. And I for one, think it's, in my estimation, that there is a movement either by my colleagues and or certain elements in the county administration to defund. This is a form of defunding law enforcement, basically attacking law enforcement and removing them. And this is obviously going to cascade over into unintended consequences of increased crime, increased violence, and increased damages perpetrated upon residents of Pima County. And not having those people who were designated to protect and serve us prior to this. So,
all right,
there's a lot going on with that, and it's not good.
All right, hang on the line, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Steve Christie, Pima County Supervisor, Republican District 4. Our conversation with the supervisor will continue. Supervisor, are you getting ready, thinking about Thanksgiving? I know they are up at Mona's Danish Bakery. They're wondering what our listeners would like in the form of a pie or dinner rolls. When it comes to pie on the Thanksgiving table, Steve Christie, which do you gravitate to? Are you a traditionalist with the pumpkin pie?
I am all of the above. Traditionalist, new, pumpkin, pecan, apple, all of them. And I'm sure Mona's makes them all and does a great job.
Yes, they do. And they're open right now, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open for lunch. Or if you would prefer to still have breakfast, that's okay as well. They're open Tuesday through Sunday, 6:30 in the morning. They open their doors and they are ready for breakfast and, as I say, lunch right now. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. And start thinking about Thanksgiving. What kind of dinner rolls do you want? What kind of pies? And they can take care of all of your requests. More with Steve Christie right after this break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, Every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and as I said at the beginning of the program, 3 weeks from now, Thanksgiving, I was just thinking about green things. They are the poinsettia capital of, I don't know, maybe the universe. They they grow a lot of poinsettias, thousands of them, and they will be ready for you for Thanksgiving. A lot of people like to have them out, some of that great color around the Thanksgiving holiday. So that's coming up. Green Things, 51 years and growing, still growing. So they are open daily, 3384 East River Road. Their website, greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business, Zocalo Village, where they import all of that great Talavera pottery. They have the largest collection of Talavera pottery in Southern Arizona and the best prices. Let's go back now on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Pima County Supervisor, Republican from District Number 4. Steve Christie is with us. Supervisor Christie, Marana Mayor Ed Honey says the city of Tucson is playing bully when it comes to this whole matter about the RTA, the Regional Transportation Authority Board. Are you getting concerned now about the timing on this?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And not only the timing, but the content. And I think Mayor Honey is absolutely right. I've been a consistent and outspoken critic of the what I would consider a power grab by the city of Tucson, and kind of a threat to take the football off the playing field and walk off with it if they don't get their way. This flies in the face, as you well know, of the original intent of the RTA, as well as the Pima Association of Governments. They the city wants to install weighted voting, and one of the hallmarks of the whole concept of PAG and RTA was that each jurisdiction had a vote, and that they were all equal in that vote to prevent any kind of lopsided influence by any of the jurisdictions. And it's worked out, as we all know, for what now 15, 18 years, in a very successful manner, with literally over 1,000 projects promised, delivered under budget and under and on time. So this is a good system that has been working efficiently and effectively for a long time. And I think the important thing that I want to underscore, Supervisor Scott represents Pima County on both boards, and he made the statement that I think is very insightful, and that is for his that's his desire to have the city of Tucson show the community where damage has been perpetrated upon the city of Tucson. Where have they been treated unfairly, and why are they feeling that they're the victims in this entire situation when clearly they're not? A very strong majority of all the projects of the RTA, for instance, were done within the city of Tucson. 90% of the next 5 years of the projects are going to be done within the city of Tucson. An overwhelming majority of the monies spent for projects were spent for the city of Tucson. And again, I point to this, what Mayor Honey says is a bullying effect. I point to it even expanded beyond the RTA and PAG, and that is with the differential water rates, with their trying to pull the rug out from under the historic PAGO road repair plan for unincorporated Pima County. This just names a few, and it's a very troubling situation, and I think it's going to undermine the efforts of collaboration and community involvement that has been the hallmark of all of these programs. The differential water rates go back to the 70s, an agreement there that they're trying to disassemble. The PAGO road repair plan is something that's been in the works for a long time. The Board of Supervisors, if you can believe it, actually voted a couple of years ago unanimously to fund the PAGO.
That's rare.
that was a rare event, and that's why I call it historic. And that's, I think, it represents some great issues and needed that we needed to just fix the roads, and this is helping us do that. As time goes closer to the reauthorization of the RTA, we have this Damoclean sword being thrust upon us by the city of Tucson that either they get what they want, or they're going to delay everything until the deadline occurs. And when the deadline occurs, if they don't have what they want, they're going to walk off the playing field and take their football and go home.
Are they sticking? Have you heard that this February 1st deadline to withdraw from the RTA, is this for real or what?
Well, I have a feeling also in the same situation that I talked about the vaccine mandates for county employee. I think there's going to be a lot of eyeball to eyeball going on here, and I do believe somebody's going to blink. And I'm guessing that the city of Tucson is going to be the one blinking, because they're really not only damaging the entire region and our county with jeopardized projects that could really benefit our infrastructure needs. That'll be on their hands. That'll be their thing to hang their hat on if it fails. So I would assume that they don't want to be known as the bad kids that are breaking the rules and breaking up the house. So I would imagine that they're going to have to temper their position. I don't have any solid evidence of that by the rhetoric that I'm hearing from the city council and the mayor. But I got to believe that at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, they're going to rethink their position, and hopefully come to their senses.
Yeah, and for those that haven't followed this, perhaps folks have just moved to our area, the RTA is a voter-approved initiative dedicated to implementing a variety of transportation projects all across Pima County, and it's been funded by a half-cent sales tax since 2006, but it sunsets. It expires now in less than 5 years, four and a half years. So there isn't a lot of time here, Steve Christie.
No, it's coming up to 2026.
Yep.
And, it sounds like a long time, but there's a lot of things that have to be taken into consideration and developed and generated between then and now. And there's not that much distance between then and now. And so it's imperative that the gears start grinding to get that whole thing implemented.
All right, Steve Christie, Pima County Supervisor, District Number 4, who always likes to say he loves being a supervisor.
Well, I was going to remind you of that, but I thank you for remembering it for me. Thank you.
All right. Steve Christie, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye.
All right. The Buckmaster Show, midway point of our program, Comet Discover, former Parade Magazine science editor, Dr. David Levy, will be on our live line right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and I'm Bill Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. How about a trip over to Silver City? Sounds good right now. They're always about 10 degrees cooler, and right now a high around, well, it's 62 midday. We're going to be in the mid-80s. They're going to be about mid-60s. Overnight lows, upper 30s, so bring a jacket. Perfect time of year over in New Mexico. Just a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Lots to do, a lot of outdoor activities. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. That is a great starting place for the many activities that await you in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, and some great places to stay. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We go now on the live line to Vail, Arizona. Dr. David Levy is the Buckmaster Show contributor on science, former science editor of Parade Magazine. He's now head of and founder of the Sharing the Sky Science Educational Organization. He's one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. He has discovered 23 comets, including his co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9, the comet that collided with Jupiter in 1994. And my, oh my, what a spectacular explosion resulted. Probably the most spectacular explosion ever witnessed in our solar system. Dr. David Levy, how are you, sir?
Hello, Dr. Bill, and it's so nice to hear your voice. You remind me of a chemistry professor I had in high school who also was Mr. Buckmaster.
Really?
He went to Acadia, which was my alma mater. Where did you go to school, Bill?
New Trier High School, Winnetka, Illinois. I grew up in the Chicago area, came out to the University of Arizona to get away from the cold weather in 1965. But Buckmasters, we've done just a little bit of history. There are approximately 2,000 families in Canada and the United States that share the name Buckmaster. The original Buckmaster, John Buckmaster, came over from England in the early 1600s. So that's kind of where it started.
Yeah, I think so. But anyway, the other Mr. Buckmaster was someone that I really highly respected, as I do you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Levy. Any horizon or any comets on the horizon, even if they are of a very faint nature?
There are a couple of very faint ones. One was a comet that I saw about 2 weeks ago. Very faint, kind of looked like a, now you see it, now you don't. But a friend I was observing with saw the same, And then the other night I also saw a comet Atlas, which was very hard to find because it was in a very faint constellation of Lynx with no bright stars in it. But once I found it, it was easy to see. And tonight is the Torrid Meteor Shower. So I'm going to be out there, and I'm really looking forward to the meteor watch.
Yeah, it's always fun, and I know you put in some... Well, normally your observing goes on, what, kind of a couple of hours over the nighttime hours?
Yeah, it's tonight'll be about an hour or two. I'll be outside sitting on a lawn chair taking picture after picture with a fisheye lens, and maybe I'll pick up a meteor.
I thought maybe you were going to say you'd be sitting on a log outside looking. Yeah. No, you'll be in a lawn chair.
In a lawn chair. I got to be comfortable.
Exactly. So we do have a meteor shower coming up.
It's tonight, yeah.
And what time should we take a look?
The later the better. I would say sometime around midnight.
Hey, David, is the Christmas star visible yet?
No, and it won't be. We really don't know what the Christmas star was. They've been doing research about it for millennia, but it was probably not a star, but a conjunction of Jupiter and Venus that took place in June of 2 BC. And they got so close that with the unaided eye, the two planets could not be separated. And that might have been what the Christmas star was.
Our good friend Tom on the other side of the glass is asking me, and I think it's a good question, when we look for the meteor shower, so where do we look? Do we look to the north or to the, or where?
Anywhere in the sky.
Hmm.
And anywhere in the sky. There's no moon. The meteors can appear anywhere in the sky.
And the chances of us seeing a couple of meteors?
They're pretty good. I saw one last night just walking around.
Mm, okay.
At least I was walking around, not the meteor.
Okay. All right, it's time for the Dr. David Levy quote of the month. What do you have for us this month,
okay,
David?
Okay, I have something from Tennyson, and I really love Tennyson. And I had the honor of meeting Jonathan Tennyson, who is Alfred Lord Tennyson's great-great-grandson. Anyway, my poem is Ulysses. The lights begin to twinkle from the rocks. The long day wanes. The slow moon climbs. The deep moans round with many voices. Come, my friends, 'tis not too late to seek a newer world. Push off and, sitting well in order, smite the sounding furrows. For my purpose holds to sail beyond the sunset and the baths of all the western stars until I die. It may be that the gulfs will wash us down. It may be that we shall touch the happy isles and see the great Achilles whom we knew. Though much is taken, much abides. And though we are not now that strength which in older days moved earth and heaven, that which we are, we are. One equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield.
Very nice. And that's one of your all-time favorite quotes, isn't
that
it?
That is really one of my favorites.
Can I ask you one more quick question about the meteor shower? It is named the Taurid meteor shower. And
it's named the Taurid because the meteors seem to emanate from the constellation of Taurus the Bull.
Ooh, okay.
And that's no bull.
Oh, that's no bull, that's for sure. How's my favorite constellation, Orion, doing right about now?
Orion's just next to Taurus the Bull, just a little east of it, and it's beautiful. I got a good view of it in the last couple of nights. It's a beautiful constellation. It's one of my favorites, too.
Yep, and I always think of it associated with the holidays. All right, Dr. David Levy, we've got you already on the schedule for December. Time flies. Before you know it, we'll be talking again. My best and love to your lovely wife, Wendy.
Thank you, and Wendy sends her love back to you.
Okay, thank you very much. Coming up next, the counselor is in the house. Attorney Don Luce, lots to talk about with Don in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Be right back with Don Luce.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Joining me in studio, Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and in Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor, and he is the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books are in their second printing. Don, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thanks.
Well, big news this week, Arizona's law, the ban on school mask mandates, was shot down by the Arizona Supreme Court. Now, there's more to this. We want to kind of unpack this, because the Supreme Court, in pretty darn quick fashion, on Tuesday, made a couple of important rulings. Walk us through this.
You bet. So, first of all, the Supreme Court did not rule on whether the ban on schools requiring masks for faculty and students is legal or illegal. The Supreme Court ruled on the process by which it was to become law. And what it said was the process was defective, and therefore that legislative provision will not become law. It doesn't mean, however, that the legislature can't attempt to redo it in a different way so that the process is constitutional. It just means that the way that the legislature did it was unconstitutional. And what I mean by that is the Constitution has essentially two very important requirements for any new law or bill that becomes law. One is that it have a title. Okay, so every bill has to have a title. And the title must describe the contents of the bill for both the legislature and the public. If it doesn't, then it becomes vulnerable to an attack like we just saw on these reconciliation bills that the Supreme Court said were unconstitutional, either in part or in whole. The second requirement of the Constitution is that every piece of legislation contain a single subject and related matters. And what the Supreme Court said in this instance was not only in three of the bills did the title not accurately describe the contents, but also in one of the bills, it contained multiple subjects. So there was a second constitutional infirmity with regard to the second piece of that constitutional requirement. And so the Supreme Court essentially declared invalid a couple of dozen laws that otherwise would have taken effect, ranging from harness racing to mask mandates to reimbursement of government agencies, just a whole wide spectrum of subjects packed into essentially four budget reconciliation bills that were defective.
These things were just sort of tacked on. They were add-ons, and it really turned out to be kind of a hodgepodge of different policy items.
Well, you're exactly right. And so backing up to the beginning, a budget reconciliation bill should, I think, be dealing with appropriations and budget
matters.
Okay.
If that's what it's supposed to be about.
All right. So using that as our baseline, and I'm going to play the role of the trial judge in this case because she essentially asked questions that were similar to these questions, but how does creating a task force to study unreported in-kind contributions relate to appropriations? Well, right. So it's a rhetorical question, of course, because it doesn't. Or how does a ban on teaching critical race theory relate to appropriations? Well, obviously it doesn't. And so these were the kinds of issues that the Arizona Supreme Court had when it was asked to look at the various provisions of these budget reconciliation bills and determine if, number one, they met the requirement that the title accurately describes the contents, and number two, that each piece of legislation deal with a single subject or related matters. And what it said with regard to four of the bills is, no, they don't pass constitutional muster. And in that case, the various provisions that were unrelated to the titles and with regard to the single subject legislation piece, the entire bill was unenforceable because it was unconstitutional.
Will these bills, I'm sure they could be reintroduced with their own appropriate heading detailing what they are all about. I would imagine they'll be reintroduced.
They could be. And one of the arguments that the proponents of the bills made was, look, this is the way we've always done it. You know, this is, you know, 110 years of history that we're talking about, and the court ought not delve into the legislative process and tell the legislature how to do its job. Well, that argument was wholly unsuccessful because I think the Supreme Court said, look, we have three branches of government, the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the judicial branch, and us being the judicial branch, we are in a position uniquely to determine whether the legislature followed the Constitution. And if we say that the legislature did not follow the Constitution, then as the judicial branch, we have the legal authority to declare the results unenforceable, which is exactly what happened in these cases.
So how does something like this happen? I mean, was this in a somebody dropped the ball, obviously, where they were in a hurry, or how does something like this happen? As you say, 110 years of history has seemed to have been thrown out the window.
Well, okay. So reading through this and reading between the lines, what I'm suspecting is that the court was faced with so many unrelated subjects in these bills that it really got backed into the legal corner. It didn't have the ability to uphold the legislation because it was so violative on its face of the constitutional process. And if you don't follow the process, then the result is invalid. I think the court, starting with the trial judge, by the way, who in September said, no, this legislation is defective. And the trial judge said, there are just so many things in these bills that have nothing to do with appropriations. They're not reconciliation issues. And then she went on to talk about various examples in the bills that had nothing to do with appropriations. I think the legislature packed things into these bills that on a standalone basis might not garner enough support for passage, but getting packed into a larger measure, they could get through.
Good point.
I think that's what happened.
This was a very short order. The Supreme Court, a three-sentence order. The court, they moved quickly, and they were pretty much right to the point.
It was, okay, so yeah. On that point,
yeah.
Let's start with the accelerated timeline that this litigation followed. The arguments were made to the trial judge on September 13th. The trial judge issued her ruling on September 27th, merely 2 weeks later. And this was a significant ruling because it dealt with the constitutionality of four budget reconciliation bills that were scheduled to take effect shortly thereafter. The Supreme Court accepted jurisdiction immediately,
right,
and issued an accelerated briefing schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And then on November 2nd, less than 50 days from when the trial judge first heard oral arguments,
wow,
issued a three-sentence ruling essentially striking down the legislation and affirming the trial judge's ruling. You don't see this kind of expedited judicial review in many cases. This is extraordinary.
It was just pushed to the top of the agenda, and it was pushed very quickly.
It was. Now, as we know, the legislature convenes in another couple of months.
Early January.
And it's entirely possible that some of these provisions, which were included in these defective reconciliation bills, are going to resurface and perhaps be passed as standalone legislation.
Now, getting back to the mask mandate, the very controversial mask mandate. So school districts, bottom line, they are now free to institute a mask mandate.
Right. So the one of the salary or budget reconciliation bills barred colleges and universities from essentially requiring mask or vaccine mandates. And the Supreme Court said that legislation is not going to take effect. So by default, the colleges and universities, at least presently, are free to implement those kinds of mandates. And so you may, as are public and charter schools, incidentally, and so you may very well see an increase in the number of colleges, universities, charter schools, community colleges that have those kinds of mandates, like the ones that at the federal level are being applied to private employers. You know, you may have to show proof of vaccination, or you may have to be subject to periodic testing if you're not vaccinated.
All right, two very important books Don Luce has authored, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, both books in their second planning. The estate planning, it's always appropriate the end of the year. It's probably always, it's always appropriate to move it to the top of your agenda, but people don't, but they do think a lot about it at the end of the year, Don.
Well, not only that, Bill, but a lot of people put it on their New Year's list of things to do, mm-hmm, because everyone understands that if something happens to you, whether you become incapacitated or you die, somebody else is going to have to take care of your affairs. And if you don't have the plan in place, it's going to be a mess.
Yeah.
And so as people sit down and they look at their year-end resolutions and their New Year resolutions, a lot of that has to do with, I'm going to get my estate plan in order.
All right. Good thing to do. Don Luce, thank you very much. Don, we'll see you early in December.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. The Buckmaster Show wrapping it up on this Thursday edition. Newly elected Tucson City Councilman, Councilman-elect, Mr. Dahl will be with us, Kevin Dahl, on our Friday Focus interview. On behalf of Don Luce, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great day.